Welcome to Open Minds Radio with Alejandro Rojas. Open Minds Radio is your UFO news authority, presenting evidence and the latest news regarding the UFO phenomenon. Here's your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello and welcome, my friend, to Open Minds Radio. This is Alejandro Rojas, your host for this wonderful show, Open Minds Radio, which I already said. Rob said that too. Bobby. We have an awesome show today. I'm really excited about it because we have some Norwegian fellows. Yes, we were able to contact them all the way back in their homeland and get a hold of them. This is Truel and Terry, actually, because that's what they go by for us English speakers who can't say their real names properly, and it is a little difficult. Although, they had problems with my name, so it went both ways. But the Toftons, and they're New Paradigm Films. They've made several UFO-related films, the latest one being The Day Before Disclosure. That's the one we've talked about because it won the People's Choice Award at the International UFO Congress at the EBE Awards. So they took one of those cool EBE statuettes with them home. So we're really happy that they won. One thing that's exciting about this film in particular is that they put it online for free. So many of our listeners, or at least a few of you, have probably already seen this online for free. And I thought that was an incredible and super cool thing for them to do because, you know, people are always complaining about being able to get content for free, although it's not free to put the content up in the first place. So it did cost them a lot. And we talk about that on the show. So that's really cool. I was really happy for that reason to see these guys win. Plus, it's a great show. So it's New Paradigms Film. NewParadigmFilms.no is their website. And we'll talk more about that later. There's some really great guys, and it's a really interesting conversation. Also, I want to thank Big JD, his You Talking to Me show from Detroit. He's on CJAM 99.1. Did an interview with him earlier today. You can look him up, Big JD, and listen to that interview. We talked about all kinds of UFO stuff for half an hour. It was a lot of fun. Really cool, nice guy, and I want to thank him for having us on. We talked about a lot of the latest news. There's someone else who likes to talk a lot about the latest news, and that is a gentleman by the name of Jason McClellan, who works here for Open Minds. We always put UFO headlines up on the website to keep you up to date, and Jason comes here every week to update us on the latest, and he is here again. Jason, how are you, buddy?
I'm great, Alejandro. I'm Big JM, and I like to talk about the news.
All right, Big JM. Is that your new radio name?
It's not, but in honor of Big JD, our new friend, I thought I'd throw out the Big JM, but I'll leave the big to him. Anyway, let's get into the news, my friend, because I love talking about the news. This is your Open Minds News Brief for Monday, April 11th, 2011. The FBI unveiled The Vault, a new electronic reading room, on their website last week. The Vault currently contains more than 2,000 digitized documents that are available for public browsing, and some of these files contain references to UFOs. One document that is getting attention from the media is a March 22, 1950 memo from Guy Hoddle, a special agent in charge of the FBI's Washington field office, concerning flying saucers that was sent to the FBI's director. As Fox News recently explained, the memo states, an investigator for the Air Force stated that three so-called flying saucers had been recovered in New Mexico. They were described as being circular in shape with raised centers approximately 50 feet in diameter. Each one was occupied by three bodies of human shape, but only 3 feet tall, dressed in metallic cloth of a very fine texture. While this memo simply shows Hoddle relaying details provided by a third party, it is still noteworthy that such details are presented in an FBI memo. Another UFO file contained in the FBI's documents relates to a UFO that exploded over Utah in 1949. The Daily Mail details the FBI cable that describes how an Army guard, a policeman, and a highway patrolman, who were all miles apart, each saw a UFO which they said exploded over mountains near Logan, north of Salt Lake City.
Yeah, the memos everybody's getting really excited, but this stuff actually isn't new. Most of this stuff came out like in 1977, including the Guy Hotel one, which every, you know, it's funny these sites posting that this is proof of Roswell, because actually the documents never have been believed to be part of Roswell. And CBS wrote a story where they kind of said that these aren't new documents. They've been out, and they made fun of some of these other news sources, I think like the Daily Mail, and they said if they would have simply called the FBI, they would have found out that the new files are not the UFO ones, but other ones. But this is a much easier way to access the UFO files.
Correct.
And even though these don't relate to Roswell, and some people, a lot of people think they've been, Bruce McAbee, for instance, he's the guy who got these documents from the FBI in 1977. And he believes that the Guy Hoddle one about the three UFOs has to do with the Scully book, which we've talked about before, and Dreamy Draw, and that's been debunked as people saying that wasn't real, that was all hoaxed, and so people think this memo was people picking up the story that was hoaxed and then relaying that to the FBI, and they wrote a memo. But not everybody agrees that these are hoaxed, because in our magazine, our next one, June, July, I wrote about Aztec and the Aztec UFO thing. And this memo and that book are related to the Aztec thing, which people think may be real now. And there's some evidence of that that we go over in the magazine. And the Dreamy Draw story that we talked about last week and is in on our website. That's all part of that, too. So they may be real crashes, but not Roswell.
Right. And there are also files that talk about weather balloons.
Yeah.
Things attached to balloons.
Yep.
But this new vault that the FBI put up is a cool way to access, to search through files. You know, you can, it's just like browsing on the web. You type in a keyword and up come the files, and you can sift through those and read all sorts of blacked out things and have fun doing it. But it is interesting that they put it up, and it's also interesting to see how just quickly things can spiral out of control with people saying, oh, proof that Roswell happened.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because, you know, there's a lot of better stuff out there. There's better evidence and stuff like that out there.
Right.
And, you know, like you said, there's some good stuff in these files that people could pay attention to that is more interesting.
Absolutely. I'm still sifting through it myself, but there's some good stuff in there.
Yeah, and there's like their cattle mutilation investigation, which a lot like other investigations where they conclude that it was probably predators, but if you look at the details of the cases they investigated, that doesn't seem to be the case at all.
Yeah. In other news, rock star Sammy Hagar continues to make headlines because of his extraterrestrial encounter claims. He was a guest on the HLN premiere of the Dr. Drew Show last Monday night, where he discussed his life of rock and roll, and he also discussed his extraterrestrial encounter. As he has previously stated, Hagar told the show's host, Dr. Drew Pinsky, "Call me crazy all you want. Anyone who says there's no one in the whole universe, we're the only ones, that's crazy." Hagar described to Pinsky the details of his alien encounter, which occurred when he was in a dreamlike state. In this dream, extraterrestrial entities communicated telepathically with Hagar. And as he has described before, Hagar explained to Pinsky, "I think it was a download-upload situation, like an experimental thing. Like I was the guinea pig." So it's cool. I mean, these stories have been told by Sammy Hagar many times before, but because of the recent release of his book and the press circuit he's been on, these fascinating stories are getting more attention and by the mainstream media.
Yeah, yeah. We talked a lot about that last week, and was it last week? I think, yeah, we talked about the other movies that the stars were talking about their UFO sightings, too.
Yep, exactly.
No new ones in the last week, though.
Nope.
Since those happened about a week ago, but I'm sure more will pop up.
Yep. Space Exploration Technology, also known as SpaceX, has already made history back in December when their Dragon space capsule became the first world's first commercial spacecraft to launch into orbit and return to Earth safely. Not stopping there, last Tuesday the company announced plans to construct the most powerful rocket the world has ever seen. Not really, but since the manned moon missions. And SpaceX has named the new rocket Falcon Heavy, and the rocket will reportedly be able to carry roughly 117,000 pounds of cargo into orbit. And that's twice as much as the current space shuttle. The rocket has been designed to carry cargo, but because it meets NASA's current safety requirements, the rocket could also be used to carry humans into space. The company is aiming to launch Falcon Heavy in 2013 from California, with follow-up launches taking place in Cape Canaveral, Florida. And another important thing to note is that they're really pushing to make space more accessible, and to do that, they're trying to make spaceflight cheaper, more affordable. And they point out that the launches of this rocket will cost just $100 million a year, or per launch. And that's kind of sickening to say just $100 million.
Yeah.
But compared to space shuttle launches, those cost $1.5 billion per launch.
It's a lot of moolah.
Isn't
it funny, though, that the future looks like the past? I mean, we're going back to rockets. We don't have these cool shuttles anymore. We're going back to these outdated-looking rockets. And I heard a friend of mine said that his friend who works for defense or for company, I think McDonnell Douglas, I can't remember, but that they were literally digging up rockets a few years ago and kind of back engineering our own rockets because they didn't know all the ins and outs of the manned space flights with the rockets, so they can continue that again.
Well, right. I mean, this points it out. It's kind of ridiculous, but this is 2011, and these guys are going to build the most powerful rocket, but the most powerful rocket since the moon missions.
Yeah.
And how long ago were those?
That was quite some time ago.
But this is what our cutting-edge technology is doing right now, is something that has already been done. So.
Yeah, isn't it funny that, I don't know, I guess when in science fiction, when people are thinking about the future, they're never thinking about budget limitations.
Oh, no.
You know, that never comes up. It's, you know, the future is, the space flight is so incredible and everything because, you know, we've got the technology and the know-how. If we had unlimited budgets, I mean, in programs like this, I think we would be already at Mars and have some incredible. We could have the space stations of 2001. Those movies created those things because the technology and the know-how was something that they had back then. And it's all a budgetary issue.
Well, we all need to transcend to the Star Trek world, the Star Trek universe, where nobody cares about money.
Mm-hmm.
Money has no meaning anymore, and people just do things for the greater good.
I've always advocated that idea.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Baruch Blumberg passed away last week of a heart attack at the age of 85. Shortly after giving a keynote address at a workshop on lunar research at NASA's Ames Research Center. USA Today explains that Blumberg helped NASA begin its search for extraterrestrial life and the study of the origins of life on Earth as director of NASA's Astrobiology Institute at Moffett Field from 1999 to 2002. According to the New York Times, the objective given to Blumberg and his team at the Institute was to answer the following questions. How does life begin and evolve? Does life exist elsewhere in the universe? And what is life's future on Earth and beyond? Blumberg was also on the SETI Institute's Board of Trustees, and before his time at NASA, Dr. Blumberg was heavily involved in researching viruses and developing vaccines, and it was this work that earned him the 1976 Nobel Prize in Medicine.
That's awesome.
Yeah, an accomplished dude. And sorry to see him go, but yeah. Cool. He NASA's really set up their search for extraterrestrial life as much as they do, but kind of cool. Also in astronomy news, Christopher Taylor, an astronomy professor at California State University, Sacramento, also known as Sacramento State, delivered a public lecture last week on the topic of extraterrestrial life. His lecture, Searching for Life in a Big Empty Universe, discussed astrobiology and how science is being used to search for extraterrestrial life in the universe. Dr. Taylor pointed out that while life is unlikely to exist in harsh environments like the surface of Mars, through the use of spacecraft and advanced technology, NASA is now searching for signs of life on Mars below the surface. The topic of extraterrestrial life is becoming more common at universities across the U.S. and across the world. The search for extraterrestrial life is gaining support from mainstream scientists, and major research institutions are taking an active role. And more universities, like Sacramento State, are hosting lectures on the subject, which helps to spark the interest among students and encourages the next generation of scientists to open their minds to new ideas about life in space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, astrobiology's definitely really taken off.
And you know, something that I makes me giggle, not too many things make me giggle, but...
I don't think I've heard you giggle ever.
I didn't say I giggle publicly.
Oh, okay. You giggle on the inside.
On the inside.
Good.
And on the internet. That's what LOL is. Not really. But it's the fact that Word and spell check programs don't know the word astrobiology.
They don't? I guess I haven't noticed that.
They haven't caught up with the times yet.
Yeah, that's
because
really...
Because astrobiology is fairly new.
How about you, Google knows it?
Google knows it.
Yeah, like if you wrote in your Gmail or something.
Oh, Google's wrapped
they're
up
on
in
the,
everything.
You know, boom, boom, boom.
I think they're involved in astrobiology and everything else. They've got their Google Earth.
Yeah.
They've even got Google Moon. Have you looked at Google Moon?
Yeah.
That thing's pretty cool.
On the Google Maps, they had my address wrong because it's a brand new house in a brand new area. You know, it was dirt on the maps the first one that my house was, I first moved in. And then it popped up where they had my house there and they had it wrong.
You're a celebrity, an important guy. So I called them up and I said, listen.
No, you
this
didn't.
This is not right. Fix it. No, I won't take
you
credit.
Did
you
not.
Did it. But go ahead.
You just right-click and you say, hey, you have this wrong. And within like a day or two, boom.
That's awesome. I didn't know it was that
they
bad.
They are very fast. They are on the ball, Google.
Excellent. Big fan of Google. Doing big things, those Google guys. Well, two scientists have written a paper where they present the hypothesis that extraterrestrial intelligences engaged in asteroid mining may be detectable from Earth. And these scientists suggest that watching for signs of asteroid mining could be a good job for SETI. These scientists explain, if technological civilizations more advanced than ours exist in the galaxy, and asteroid mining is a common activity which underpins their existence, then searching for signatures of targeted asteroid mining is an appropriate activity for SETI to undertake. The paper that presents this hypothesis will be published in the International Journal of Astrobiology. That's an interesting one. Looking for signs of mining.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a stretch. It's kind of, it's as silly as the radio signals to me.
Well,
but,
again, we pointed this out. A lot of these scientists are looking for topics for papers. And
yeah, I think you're right. Because, come on, an asteroid, I mean, that they could build a craft that could fly is more likely than an asteroid. Because an asteroid, the asteroids that are around us, you know, the ones that have come from very far away are still pretty much in our solar system. And, you know, it takes them a long time. They're not moving at close to light speed or anything. You know, they're not warping or doing anything that would make something move quicker than light or like these possible technologies that ETs or other civilizations may have. So it sounds kind of silly.
Well, again, I think this is also projecting human behaviors and human ideals onto extraterrestrials. Number one, because we love to mine something until there's nothing left, and look where our priorities are. We're not going to the moon. We're going to an asteroid next. That's where NASA is focusing, sending us to an asteroid.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what we want to do is mine an asteroid, but...
You, not me.
Well, I don't want to. I'm using the collective we, but...
I want to go to Mars. I want to hang out with the ETs, man. I want to fly in a spaceship. That's my goal.
Well, and we should do
it. Give me a ride.
They're already listing all of the problems with going to an asteroid. I don't understand doing it in the first place. Let's focus on the moon. Let's focus on Mars.
Didn't they see the movie? What was it we were talking about with Bruce Willis?
Yes. What was that movie?
Armageddon.
Armageddon, yes.
Yeah, going to an asteroid does not look fun.
Nope. They can go. I'll wait for the rocket to the moon.
Yeah. Fly me to the moon.
Well, and Sci-Fi's Fact or Fake Paranormal Files has been breaking viewership records. Last Wednesday, for the third consecutive week, Fact or Fake set a new series ratings record with 1.32 million total viewers. So those guys are having a successful run there. And congratulations to our friend Ben Hansen there.
Yeah, buddy who we had on the show. I thought that was a great show, too. It was very interesting, some great stories, and he's a really neat guy, so it's good to hear, yeah, that their show's doing so well.
Yep, and again, it shows that this material, there's people are definitely interested in it.
Yeah, people can question, you know, their investigation and stuff like that, but at least they're open-minded, I mean, enough to where they were really floored by the UFOs they saw out here in Arizona.
Right. And, you know, I've got to give them credit because unlike some of the other hunting shows like ghost hunting and things like that, shows where they hardly ever find anything, these guys do find things that they can't explain. And like with Jeff Willis when they were in Arizona, they capture their own UFO. Kind of cool.
Very cool.
So good job, guys, at Factor Faked. Alejandro, that is it for the news. Be sure to check out these stories and more at openminds.tv, your source for UFO-related news. I'm Jason McClellan, your Open Minds news correspondent, and you've been briefed. Back to you, Alejandro.
All right. Thank you, Jason. A couple of stories that we have on the web. We've got some really good things here going on, guys. So let's see. South Park, the little buddy. This is kind of fun. This was an investigation that I did in 2007 with a friend of mine. It is in South Park, so we got a South Park enthusiast, and that would be my goofy buddy Chuck Zukowski, who I've had on the show a few times before, the guy who recently got fired as a deputy sheriff because of his paranormal investigations, and this being one of them. I don't know if they had an issue with this one. But this is interesting. South Park is actually... Park is a county, Park County in Colorado, and the southern part of it is called South Park in the South Park Basin, and these are some Rocky Mountain plains, you know, covered by mountains up there. And there's talk of UFOs out there. A buddy of mine told me that, hey, you know, there's a store that even sells T-shirts and paraphernalia with this little buddy UFO and these aliens and UFO T-shirts because they have so many sightings out there. And I hadn't heard of this. None of us had, even though we live in Colorado. Chuck lives in Colorado Springs, which is a little closer out there. And so we went out to investigate. We called up the lady at the store. We asked her if she wouldn't mind. Very nice lady, Susie Jones. And we asked her if she could have some of the witnesses meet us there at the store. And they did. So we went and we interviewed some people. We videotaped some interviews. In fact, somewhere online... I used to have it on Google. You know, I was talking so great about Google, but this is something that's kind of bad. They screwed up my video, and it's not online anymore. But we videotaped these interviews, and all of these people were seeing these UFOs. This is an area that is west of Colorado Springs. And Colorado Springs is the home of Cheyenne Mountain. They're the home of the headquarters of Space Command. And Cheyenne Mountain is the home of NORAD. That's the North American Air Defense out there, and they, you know, monitor space and everything flying in space. And according to these people, they were seeing UFOs in that area, and they would watch these things kind of move and dart off, and very interesting sightings. So that night, actually, we did kind of a sky watch and tried to video some UFOs. Unfortunately, we didn't get any. But kind of an interesting story out there in South Park, and this is... the area that the South Park cartoon is based off of. Because there's actually an old town area of Fairplay, and Fairplay is the biggest town, which isn't that big of a town. It's a ski town, a mountain town with mountain lodges and stuff, real nice. And in this town, they have a remake of an 1880s town. It's incredible, really detailed, of this old mountain kind of ghost town. And they call this town South Park. And throughout Fairplay, they do have some trinket stores and stuff like that where you can buy South Park, cartoon trinkets and stuff like that because this is the area. It wasn't too far. It was about 40 miles up the road towards Denver that one of the creators of the South Park cartoon lives. So, you know, when they're out there in the mountains and in the plains of Colorado, that's where they're thinking of. And these are really small areas, so... without a whole lot of people. We have another story that we posted last week as well, late last week, and that we're calling the Hill UFO, and this is kind of neat. A gentleman by the name of Eric contacted me and said his grandfather, who is a prominent figure in this town in Altamont in New York near Albany, had a sighting when he was a policeman in 1971. So he asked if I would call his grandfather and talked him into talking to me. His grandfather, obviously, he is a very prominent figure in the town, so he doesn't really want to talk about it. Neither of them let me use their last name. But he told me about this incredible sighting of this flying saucer that went over him while he was really pretty much relieving himself on the side of the road, going off to hear this lady's story about seeing a UFO. And it flew over him. It beamed this beam of light on him. It really freaked him out. And they said, "Boss, where are you? Where are you, Sergeant?" He was a sergeant at the time. And he said, "Why, I think I just saw the UFO this lady's talking about." So we went to her house, and she talked about this large disc similar to what he saw flying over this barn. And she was freaked out, and the dog was really freaked out, crawling on its belly because it was so scared and whining. So a very interesting story, and I put some more details into everything that Neil told me. And like I said, I couldn't use their last names, and he didn't want me to use his exact position either. And then tonight we're going to be putting up some more information, and tomorrow, on the FBI UFO file. So I'm going to put more details about the HODL document. And then Antonio's written a whole long piece about all of the documents that FBI has put online or put out there before, and the history about how Bruce McAbee back in 1977 retrieved most of these documents through Freedom of Information Act requests. And if you're not familiar, Bruce McAbee was an optical physicist, or is, he's retired now, and a ufologist, and he worked for the Navy for a period of time. So really neat guy, great researcher, and some very, very interesting material. So you'll have to check out our website, openminds.tv. However, I want to get into our very exciting interview with our Norwegian friends from New Paradigm Film, Truls and Terry Toftens, and some great guys. So let's hear what those guys have to say.
I am here, very excited to be speaking to Terry and Truls Toftens from New Paradigm Films. They did the recent documentary, The Day Before Disclosure, which won the People's Choice Award for the EBEs at the UFO Congress this year. So that was very exciting, a lot of fun to have these guys here all the way from Norway. Welcome,
yeah.
Guys.
Yeah, hi. So how are you, Alejandro?
I'm doing pretty good. We've got some wonderful weather out here. What's weather in Norway like this time of year?
Well, actually, the snow has started melting now, so we're having, quite nice weather just now, so we're looking forward to some more kind of spring weather at the moment. But we've had a pretty tough winter. It's been freezing all the way since November, actually.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you're finally thawing up, huh?
Yeah, and we had such a good time over in Phoenix just some weeks ago, and we brought back this big award that was absolutely fantastic. And everyone here is just they couldn't almost believe what had happened when we got back. And Troll was actually a bit worried about getting that big award statue through the customs.
But the guys in customs had a pretty strange look at us, but we went through, and it was okay. So
good, they didn't confiscate it or think it was something.
They questioned where have you guys been, but it's always a good story to bring up, so that's cool.
As far as I know, you're the only ones from Norway that came to the conference.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably right. I didn't see any other Norwegians there. But I know there have been some Norwegians there before. But, you know, well, it's a long way to go, and but still, this is, I think, the absolute top conference on this issue in the world. And I must repeat what I've said many times before, that the way that Open Minds handled this conference was absolutely top professional. Everything worked, all the bookings worked, the audio was good, the visuals were good, all the microphones worked, everybody was happy, and thanks to you, it was a really, really great week for all of us.
Yeah, well, thank you. A lot of that is luck, but luckily, all the microphones and everything worked. So, and this is not your first EBE award, is that correct?
Well, actually, we also won the People's Award back in 2006 for a film we made on the crop circle phenomenon. It's called... what's it called again? It's called Crossovers from Another Dimension.
Uh-huh.
And it was a film on crop circles that we had been working on for 3 years. And in 2006, we had it on the International UFO Conference, a film festival there, and it won both the category which it was in and also the People's Reward. So that was also absolutely great. But
great.
To kind of repeat that, again, with our news film, was absolutely unbelievable. I mean, we're still up in the skies, you know.
Great. Well, that's great. It's a great film, and I think it's absolutely amazing and wonderful that you guys were able to provide that film or make that film available for free for people. I think that just is a testament to how serious you guys are about getting the word out.
Yeah, well, we our main goal from the very beginning was to get the information out. We had, like Terry said, we had been working for several years with the crop circle phenomenon, and also with a film on a very peculiar light phenomenon in Norway called Hessdalen. And so we, you know, after being into these things for several years, we felt that we really felt that it was of huge importance to get it out to people, because there are, you know, there are tons of information, but it's very, very difficult for people to navigate, you know, and there are a bunch of bogus and out there. So, you know, if we could get to, well, we had been talking to a lot of credible people over the years. So when this thing came together, we figured that it would be nice to show people what the real story is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to get into more on each of your three films in this arena that you've done. But to begin with, I mean, your films are very well produced. And they look great, very professionally done, which makes them, you know, even more incredible. But this is not your focus as far as production goes. Is that correct? This is kind of one of your side things. You actually do more conventional type of work.
Well, I myself have been working for 25 years as a professional filmmaker, but mostly for doing corporate films. I have my background from the Norwegian Broadcasting Corporation, and 25 years ago I started doing things on my own for the Norwegian corporations, for the especially for the oil industry in Norway, which is very big, and also the shipping industry. And so I have been concentrating on promotional films and educational films for the last 25 years. But this urge to do films on topics that really have engaged me and also Troll over the past years has been there all the time, and we were just waiting for an opportunity to start a kind of an alternative type of business, or, well, not business, but more kind of a activity to try to use the skills that we had gained over the years by doing educational films and promotional films to do films that could promote and educate people in these issues, because we felt that you know, there was actually a need to get more information out. And, of course, there are a lot of films on these topics, and with all respect, many of them are very good. But we wanted to try to make it our way and to interview people that we felt had the best stories and were the most credible people. So we spent 3 or almost 4 years traveling around on conferences, visiting people in their homes, both here in Europe and also a lot of people in the U.S. And I think we did something like almost 50 or 60 interviews in total, and about 40 of them appear in the film. So it's it was an enormous amount of work, a lot of time, and of course a lot of expenses, which we covered mostly ourselves. We had also one of our corporate clients who was very interested in this these topics. He helped us a bit with financing some of our travels, but mostly it's financed by ourselves and the money that we could make on our the more kind of main stuff work that we do.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you hesitant to start to get into kind of these produce these paranormal pieces because you work with these corporations? Were you worried that they would kind of look badly on this and that you might lose business?
Well, you got a point there, of course. that's why we have actually created a separate company for our paranormal films called New Paradigm Films. New Paradigm Films. And the company that we where we do our corporate stuff is called Toftenus Multivision. Multivision because we, back in the 80s, also worked with multi-image systems, you know, a lot of slide projectors and all that stuff. Mm. So we actually have two different companies, and we didn't want to kind of mix the image, so to speak. But the funny thing is that after we have released these films, and especially after we won these awards, our corporate customers have, you know, turned pretty proud of working with us. So it has actually helped us also in the corporate world to get acknowledged by what we have achieved on these more type of paranormal films. Mm-hmm. So it's been a win-win situation, actually.
That's great. Have you turned on some of these clients to this subject? Have some of them who were maybe more skeptic kind of open their minds a bit?
Oh, yes, indeed. Of course, the crop circle phenomenon is actually, well, it's more easy to get people interested in it because it's so visual, you know. Mm-hmm. Crop circles are there. You can visit them. You can do research on them. They are pretty. They are attractive. They are, you know, it's a nice trip to go and watch them. The UFO phenomenon, of course, is much more difficult because there are very few good pictures of it, very little film of it. I know there is a lot of film of it, but that's in some very secret archives. So the stuff that is out there for people to watch is not very good. And it's not easy to study the phenomenon because it's there for 3 seconds and then it's gone again. Mm-hmm. And if you want to study it properly, you have to have a lot of equipment like radar, low-frequency radio, and very advanced photography equipment, which the military, of course, are very privileged to have. But, you know, among normal people don't have that kind of stuff. So it's hard to study, and that's why it's also hard to convey the message, because you have to actually tell stories about what people have seen and get people to tell their own stories, and that's the most convincing, that's the closest you can get to, you know, to convince people, is to have people tell what they have experienced themselves. So it's a bit harder to convince people about the UFO situation because all the information is not very accessible.
Right. How about Norway in general? How are people? Are they more skeptical, you think, than people here in the U.S. Or people in other countries?
Well, the Norwegian people are actually quite open to, you know, these type of subjects because I don't know. It seems to be a kind of a new trend that, like 20 years back, when I was also very interested in UFOs, you know, all my friends laughed at me, and I didn't really like to mention it to my colleagues at work and all that. But now it seems to be, you know, people are more interested, and I think it's because it has been exposed very much on TV. I mean, Steven Spielberg has done a fabulous job in getting people interested in these topics, even though his films are science fiction and all that. And, of course, films like Avatar and other types of films who are dealing with these subjects actually engage people. And when you come up with a documentary about the real stuff, they are more open to that than they were like 20, 30 years back. So things have changed. And I've got the feeling that the same thing has happened in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Troy, how did you feel about your dad being into this stuff? Were you embarrassed at all at any point?
Well, you know, I've heard stories all my life about this stuff, these things. And so for me, it has been a field of interest, you know. Of course, I have had friends who have, you know, smiled at the whole thing. But as I myself got more into it, especially, you know, in the last 10 years, I've gotten more involved in it myself. I've been, it's been, well, way more easy to explain to people and to tell them, you know, why my father has been interested in this all these years. So, well, yeah, 10 years ago, all my friends were very skeptical, but as I have, you know, done research together with my father and talked to people and brought, you know, interviews hope back home, most of my friends and the people I'm surrounded with are getting pretty much convinced.
Mm-hmm. For you, Troll, what was the most convincing thing when it came to UFOs? What really opened your eyes or really early on maybe is something that left an impression to you that made you feel like, wow, this phenomena really is the real thing?
As I said, you know, I'd heard stories and I was, you know, pretty familiar with the whole concept of there being, you know, life outside of, out there in the universe. But but for me, on a personal level, it was our first trip to Great Britain and to Wiltshire, where the masses of the crop circles are. So back in 2003, and we went there to mainly we'd heard about it, and we went there just to primarily check it out, but. You know, our first night inside a crop circle, you know, really changed a lot of things because suddenly this whole paranormal realm was suddenly something real, you know. And I felt, you know, and later we've come to understand that, you know, there are probably a lot of crop circles that are made by people, but still, there is so much evidence, and on, you know, the phenomenon being real. So, for me, standing inside a crop circle for the first time was really a kind of physical evidence that, well, science and the establishment hasn't got all the answers, you know, because if I showed this to any scientist, they would simply laugh and shove it away. But right there and then, I experienced something that was kind of outside the box. So for me, the whole thing kind of kick-started with the crop circles, and then, you know, talking to people who have had experiences, talking to people that have claimed to have been, you know, abducted and explaining and in detail, you know, what has happened to them leaves a huge impression. One thing is to see it, you know, on TV, or through a documentary, but to talk to people one-on-one it's a deep experience. It's a special experience. So it started with the crop circles, and then, you know, it's been it's been downhill from there.
What about you, Terry? I mean, way back when, what got you really into this subject?
Well,
about paranormal.
Back in the early 60s, mm-hmm. I found in my father's bookshelf a book called Flying Saucers Are Real, and I think the author was George Adamski. And I was like 12 years old, and from that moment, I was hooked, you know. I thought that book was so extremely exciting that I decided there and then that I wanted to investigate myself to find out what this was all about. And all over the years, I've been following the phenomenon. I've been reading a lot of books. I've been to some conferences here and there, and some years back, I decided that I would try to make a documentary about the whole situation. But the thing that really kicked in for me was when I went to this small valley in Hessdalen, up in North Norway. It's a very remote valley where there have been a lot of UFO observations over the past 25 years. And I went there to do a documentary on that particular topic. And while I was there, I saw this phenomenon myself. And when you see things yourself, seeing is believing. And after that moment, I was absolutely confident that there is a situation here that is much, much larger than anyone can imagine. And I think it was time to open up and try to get more transparency into this whole situation. And, you know, that's what really has been the drive or the propeller, or what you call it in English, behind this work that we have done, because we feel that, I mean, humans are grown up now, and we are actually mature enough to face the truth, what is going on our planet and what is going on around our planet. And I think that transparency must really be one of the things that we all should fight for. Okay, now we have had this internet revolution, which has made it possible to convey information and to pick up information about almost everything. Just look how the Arab world now is having this big revolt that was started because of the internet, and look what WikiLeaks have started in making things transparent. And now I think it's time that this subject too should should have this type of transparency, because, I mean, it's absolutely silly that someone in government or in some kind of governmental or military organization should have the right to decide what the rest of the people on this planet should know about and not know about. I mean, who gave them the right to do that?
Mm-hmm.
I think transparency is the only way that we can solve our planetary problems, our political problems, our environmental problems. And I really think that everyone should tell their politicians and tell their military people that now we have to open up, now we are mature enough to know what's going on, and we have to stop this campaign of disinformation and this truth embargo and all that silly stuff that has been going on for too long.
Right. I wanted to ask about getting to kind of the films that you did. The first film, it looks like, was your crop circle film. And what inspired you to tackle crop circles first?
Well, it started actually with I visited an exhibition here in Norway where there was a booth with a lady who had some very strange pictures. And I felt those pictures looked absolutely great. It looks like someone had been doing great artwork in the landscape. Mm-hmm. And I asked her, who is the artist who has made these fantastic kind of geometrical sculptures in the landscape? And she said, well, to be honest with you, I really don't know. And so I, she told me about this phenomenon, which was very apparent, especially in Britain, in southern England. And it really triggered my curiosity. So I brought some pictures, showed them to my son, Troll, and then we decided there and then to go and look it up ourselves. So we... couple of months later, we actually entered the first crop circle, and that being there and seeing this on face to face, so to say, we then decided that we wanted to try to make a film about it, because obviously not very many people, at least in Norway, knew about this phenomenon at all. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to make a TV documentary. So we did, and we had it on TV. It was aired here in Norway 4 times, and it created a lot of interest. And after that, an enormous amount of Norwegians have been over to England to watch the this phenomenon. So that was it was absolutely fantastic. And, you know, like Troll said here, when you enter a crop circle for the first time, and there are big or great reasons to believe that something from maybe another world or an other realm or another dimension has been here just hours before creating this, you know, that's an experience that really, really triggers something inside you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a... I haven't been to the crop circle yet in England, or a very big one. I'm real excited to do that one day, and everybody describes how it's an incredible experience.
Yeah, it is. It's you know, you get you get goosebumps all over. Mm-hmm. You can feel these energies many times, and well, it's an enormous it's a great experience in so many ways. And one of the other things that is very, very interesting with the crop circles, or fascinating, is that it attracts people from all over the world. So going into a crop circle, you meet so many other people. Everybody starts discussing how it could have been made. I mean, discussing bigger questions. And it's like entering in a big outdoor philosophy seminar, you know, with people from all over the globe. And it's fantastic. And you make new friends. You go to the English pubs, which are all, you know, all around the place, having a beer in the evening and discussing. And it's... I mean, it's a fabulous way to spend a week or two of your holiday. I really recommend it.
Now, you interviewed a lot of people. You have, you know, Charles Mallet, is that how you say it, or Mallet?
Oh, Charles Mallet, yes.
Yeah, and Lucy Pringle, Michael Glickman, Nancy Talmadge, Miles Johnston, Paul Vigay. You know, a lot of people that you interviewed for this documentary. What were some of the insights that you learned, or some of the highlights that for you during these interviews and research?
Well, you know, there actually are two sides to this this phenomenon. One is the kind of the physical side, which you can invest using typical scientific investigation methods, like how is the crop laid down. You can measure the magnetic fields. You can measure how, or see how the stalks are bent, the blown nodes, you know, a lot of kind of physical stuff that you can investigate. And from that type of investigation, you can kind of get an idea of how this actually has been made. And in many, very many cases, the conclusion is quite clear that it would be absolutely impossible for people to do this kind of work in a very short time frame, in the dark without any lights. And you know, in the crop fields in England, in this particular area where there are many of them, there are people sitting with night goggles on every single hilltop during night mm-hmm. to see if they can catch anything or see anything. So if you were to make or to do this, you know, with handcrafts, you had to use an, I mean, it's pitch dark. You can't see a thing. And if you're trying to make a very, very complicated geometric design without leaving any footprint or without doing any error, I mean, it's incredible to see how that actually can be done with people watching you with night goggles, you know. So it's that's the physical side of it, which can be investigated and which is very interesting. And there are a lot of very clever people who do these types of investigations. Nancy Talbot has been doing a lot of it with Dr. Levingood, have been taking analyses of soil samples, analyses of the crop itself, and the results that they have come forward with are actually quite mind-blowing. And then you have this other, more kind of semi or physical side, or you know, the things that kind of are more appeals to your feelings and your intuition. And people have strange, very strange types of experiences when they enter crop circles. To some people, they actually get sick. And other people have these most wonderful revelations of, you know, kind of, godlike things that they experience. Many people do meditations, and they feel that entering a crop circle is just like entering in a holy ground or a church or whatever. So it has so many different sides to it that are very, very fascinating. So, as I said, I really can recommend visiting the crop circles. It's absolutely fabulous.
Now, your second film was Hasdalen, and that is really interesting to me because, as you talk about in this film, it's an ongoing type of thing, and people can kind of go out there like you and witness phenomena. What is it that you saw, and what is it that people see?
Well, Hasdalen is, well, to put it this way, in 1983, J. Allen Hynek, which everyone in the UFO fields knows about, he was, you know, the official investigator for, I think, the U.S. government on these topics for a very long time. He was there to look at this phenomenon, and he said that he made a statement afterwards. He said that Hasdalen is actually the world's very only UFO laboratory, because here you can study the phenomenon because it appears almost all the time. Now, back in 1981, things started happening in Hasdalen. This is a very small valley, only populated with about 150 people, and there are a few farms. It's quite high up in the mountains, so it's very, very remote. And things started happening, big lights, and when I say big lights, I mean lights as big as a barn or a big house, suddenly appeared in the midst of the valley, under the treetops, staying there still for almost an hour. And sometimes traveling up the valley early in the evening, coming down 2 hours later, for a long period, the lights were so regular that you could almost adjust your watch by it. And some of these lights just disappeared into a lake, which was far up in this valley. And people living there started reporting these things. They didn't know what it was. And sometimes they also saw objects, like big kind of brownish or silverish big objects, like 40 meters long, that's almost 100 feet long, And they started reporting this. And, of course, people laughed at them. They were ridiculed. They said, okay, you're living up in this small mountain valley. You drink a lot of homemade stuff and whatever it is you do. But after a while, the media got attracted, and also the military were attracted by this, and also the Norwegian Official Broadcasting Corporation was attracted, and suddenly people came from all over the place to see this, and they saw it. Almost every night they saw it. These lights coming up the valley and under the treetops, some of them extremely big, some of them smaller, and going down again afterwards. And a lot of film was taken, a lot of pictures were taken. The military got it on radar. And after a while, some enthusiasts, some scientists decided to put up an observatory on a 24-hour basis, which they did then in the mid-90s. And they started recording a lot of stuff, both on radar, on low-frequency radio, on video, and on pictures. They distributed this on the Internet, and this phenomenon got known all over the world.
Wow.
And there were a lot of TV coming from all over the place, where people from Japan, from U.S., from Russia, a lot of investigation. And this continued and does till this day. Now we have three permanent observatories in the valley, one Norwegian, one French, and one Italian. The French and Italian are financed by the governments in those countries. The Norwegian is financed by university. And they record this strange phenomenon all the time. Officially, they are investigating an unknown natural phenomenon, because the word UFO does not sound good when you're, kind of trying to get these things funded.
Right.
So they are researching an unknown natural phenomenon, but they have recorded enormous amounts of data, and there have been a lot of conferences up there, people coming from all over the place. And it's still a big question what this really is, but the observations are enormous, and I just can't believe why this is not more known in the general media. So we did a documentary on it 2 years back, and it's all also in English, and it's been pretty well received all over the place, and it documents this pretty good. We have a lot of footage from this phenomenon.
Do these things look solid, or are they just do they seem to be just light?
Both, yeah. Sometimes it's solid objects seen in daytime.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the people living up there have seen it over and over and over again, these big objects. One woman described it like a big piece of brown bread, 100 feet long, with the lights in both ends, traveling absolutely silently right over the treetops. Another local guy we talked to, he talked about them as the planes without wings. They were big as passenger planes, but with no windows and no wings. And so objects have been seen, many types of typical UFO, like cigar shapes, like looking like saucers, and all that kind of stuff. But also very many light objects, big ones, big as houses, and also very many objects like more like soccer balls sizes. And what I saw personally was I was sitting on one of these mountaintops. It was 1 o'clock in the morning, absolutely pitch dark. I could see the stars. It had just snowed a lot, but it had stopped snowing, so the sky was clear. And suddenly, it was just like someone fired a big flash from a photo flash right above my head. And I looked up, and there were two very big, clear light sources or balls of light or whatever. But because the sky was dark, it was impossible to figure out how far away they were or how big they were. But they were, with some distance, I could see stars between them, but they were traveling like they were connected. They were absolutely traveling in parallel speed, and after like a half a minute, they just shot off right into space or to cosmos, and that was absolutely unbelievable. So, and I saw it together with a bunch of students, and we were all just shook up by that sight. And this thing was also recorded on both radar and on video. On a photographic film. So it was definitely no hallucination. And to see that, I just felt that someone was there to say, hello, we are here, and you should know, but we won't come any closer than this. But
wow.
Yeah, so that was absolutely, you know, it was a great thrill.
Yeah, sounds amazing. Have people spotted anything else unusual, like maybe entities in the area?
Definitely. There have been clear traces of landings, and they seem to say these craft or whatever they are seem to have kind of a tripod system that they land on, because they leave big landing marks on the ground that are kind of a foot deep, and it's three of them placed like a triangle, and that has been seen by people many times. And on two occasions, people have seen entities around these landed craft that are seemingly taking soil samples. One woman described it as, she said, they looked just like the men that we saw on the moon, the NASA astronauts when they were walking on the moon with big helmets and a kind of a rucksack on their back, and they had not white but brown, overalls or clothing, and it looked like they were taking soil samples, and so that has been seen on two occasions. And on one occasion, there was actually a big soil sample taken in the midst of nowhere, 2 hours walk from the closest dirt road. There was a big soil sample, like it was 6 by 4 meters, which is like 20 by 12 feet, a piece of turf cut out of with laser precision. It was like 2 feet deep, and it was lifted, and this weighed a couple of tons. It was lifted off the ground and put on the side. And an amazing thing, because when you try to lift it yourself, it just fell into pieces because it was so wet. So something had the ability to pick this up and put it aside.
Wow,
you're still there?
Incredible.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Still here. Just listening.
Yeah, and we got pictures of that in the film.
Uh-huh. That's exciting. That sounds great. And for people, just so people know, newparadigm.no is where people can go to buy the films. And like you said, they are in English also.
Yeah, and I think this Hestalen case is one of the best documented cases on the UFO thing ever, because there are so many physical evidences and so many radar observations and done by scientists. So it's the scientists are all very convinced that this is a phenomenon that is it's definitely not human made.
Uh-huh.
But they haven't got any clear explanation yet. But it's actually a case that is very heavily investigated at this
time.
It
sounds incredible. Did you submit this film to the EBE Film Festival?
Yes, we did.
You did.
In 2 or 3 years back.
Uh-huh.
But it was actually the first film that was shown on the whole festival, and I felt that it didn't have too much audience. I wasn't there myself, but anyway, it was shown, but it didn't win any prize.
Oh, that's terrible. That's a tragedy. Well, I'm surprised, because it sounds, I know your work is incredible, so I am just really, really excited to watch that one, because that sounds incredible. The other film, though, in the remaining time that we have, I'd like to talk about, of course, is The Day Before Disclosure, which is your recent documentary, the one that won the People's Choice Award it's already been a month and a half almost, a little more than a month ago. And you've got a lot of people that you interviewed in this film regarding the UFO phenomena. I mean, and it's some big people like Paul Hellyer, and you have Edgar Mitchell, the Apollo astronaut. This must have been a lot of work.
Yes, we've been working on that film for the last 4 years. And we decided that if we are going to, you know, make a film which is aimed on the general public, we have to get the most credible people to tell stories that that really has some sense and some value. So we did a lot of research to try to find out who were the people that we wanted to interview. And we used like 4 years visiting people in their homes, in universities, going to a lot of the UFO festivals, of course, where all these people come. And so we have done some, I think it's some almost 60 interviews. And of those 60 interviews, 40 of them are appearing in the film. And it has been an, you know, just to, I think we had some 120 hours of stuff to when we started editing. So the editing process itself was, I don't know how many hundred hours we use. At some time, mm-hmm. we just stopped counting the hours.
Mm-hmm.
But to put this together and try to kind of make it into a story that was interesting to watch was, it was a lot of work. But, of course, it was an extremely interesting work. So it was absolutely so great. We had such a great time when we did it. We had, of course, a lot of discussions. We had to write a lot of narration and discussing back and forth what are we going to include and what are we not going to include, because the UFO situation covers very many topics. And we actually decided very early that we are not going to make a film that will scare people or, you know, try to exaggerate or to pull all these more dark sides of this phenomenon up to the surface. I mean, we found out that we will leave that to Hollywood. They are very good at making
yeah.
scary films about these topics. We will not do that. We will try to express and to what most people tell us, which is not very scary. It's well, it can be scary because it's a piece of the unknown. But apart from that, no one seems to have been murdered or really hurt badly in any way in having encounters with these ETs. Of course, many people have been shaken because this is so out of this world. And it's tough to face a reality where ETs suddenly are a part of reality, and that takes some. It's strains your psychs, your psychic sides, of course. But when it comes, when you sum it up, this phenomenon seems to be a. It is not a a thing that is trying to. Destroy us or kill us or whatever, because if that had been the case, they probably would have done it a long time ago. It seems to me that someone or many different, civilizations or actors or whatever out there, they are studying us. We are obviously very interesting as a object for study. And what we also discovered that what they are studying is many of these ETs are emotional sides. Many of the abductees, which count, you know, their numbers are by thousands, but we have interviewed many of those, and they seem to have been part of a kind of a program where they study humans for different reasons, and the emotional side of human beings seems to be one of the absolutely most interesting things, so which is part of this seemingly program that's going on, ET studying humans. And, well, the work to try to figure out what to bring into the film was hard because, you know, you have things like cattle mutilations, you have, which is seemingly very bad, of course, is nothing compared to what we do to our laboratory animals, but still it seems a nasty thing. We didn't want to take that into the film because we wanted to make a film that could present this to people who have not been into the UFO subject in the first place. And if you then, so we did not include all the things that are kind of more advanced or takes some. If you actually want to study things like animal mutilations, you have to have studied the whole topic for a while, you know, to get used to it. As of, you know, first-hand information, we left that out. We decided that, and we also left out much of the stuff about the abductions, which we will have saved for probably a later production. So we wanted to present the situation about the whole topic being, you know, on this truth embargo thing, that there is a reality that has been kept from the public, and that was, you know, our main thing, to get that out, that there is a reality there that is very real, and it's time that people should know about it, and we should open up and try to be more transparent, because, as I said, we are, as a population now on this planet, we are mature enough to face the truth about our place in the cosmos, and that there are, that we are part of a much, much larger reality. So that is what we wanted to bring out with this film.
Now, one of the things you mentioned is in the film, you even talk about the children and, you know, will future generations see us? This generation is kind of silly for hiding our head in the sand and not paying attention to this subject. And with the title of the film, the Day Before Disclosure, do you feel that we are on the brink of disclosure?
Well, I can comment on that. We had a feeling that there are you know, a huge amount of information surfacing these days, and thanks to the internet and also because a lot of the people that was involved in these things on the military side and back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s are starting to coming out and telling about it now, you know, as old guys. And the last 10 years has been a kind of overflow of information on this compared to previous decades. So we kind of, you know, asked ourselves, if this thing actually breaks sometime in the next, you know, months or years or whatever, how will that impact our whole society? And if and we figure that it has to be, if this thing breaks, it has to be one of the biggest events in human history. So we kind of pose the question that when the children of, you know, the next century read their story, their history books in school, right? How will they be presented with the past? And we figured that the UFO phenomenon has to become a pretty big chapter in the history books. So that was kind of the starting point for the whole angle of the film, because right now there is absolutely no information on this in the establishment. But if this thing breaks, people has to relate to it, and people has to talk about it. And we have a feeling that this whole secrecy thing is coming to an end. It's, you know, of course, difficult to say if it's going to happen, when it's going to happen, but the amount of information is it's like a flood that can't be hold back pretty much longer. So at one point it has to come out, and after that it will be a major topic in world history. You know.
Yeah, it's exciting to think about. You know, kids reading their history books.
Yeah.
And having the chapters on UFOs and things like that. And I think what you all are doing is a sort of disclosure by getting some of this information that people don't have access to out to the public.
Yeah, well, that was, you know, there are also, you know, a lot of other filmmakers out there, and there are, you know, people having websites, radio shows like yours, and there is, you know, a growing number of people spreading information on this thing, these things. And it's like in any other topic. If it's ever going to, you know, surface in the mainstream media and in main public's attention, there has to be enthusiasts, you know, spreading the word, and you know, we consider ourselves enthusiasts in this field, you know.
And
yeah.
To me, it's like just a tsunami building up,
mm-hmm.
because I think this we are all part of a grassroots movement that is growing bigger and bigger and bigger by the every day. And especially I can see it here in Europe, people are getting more and more convinced that these things are real, and especially after many of the European countries have opened up their UFO archives, although they have still closed, they haven't done that with their military archives, of course, but in Britain they have actually released pretty many amazing cases from their UFO archives.
Mm-hmm.
And people are paying attention, and this is growing like a big wave, like a tsunami. And I have all along felt that this topic is never going to break by some person in government saying, hello, I just want to say that for the last 50 or 60 years we have been keeping a secret here because we didn't feel that you were capable of knowing the truth, but so and so. I don't think that's going to happen. It will not be President Obama or any big official person taking, this to the public. But eventually they will be forced to open up because the pressure will build to be so big that it will be very embarrassing for different types of governments trying to hold this back. And when it breaks, they're going to find all types of excuses why this hasn't been released before, and some of those excuses will be quite plausible, I guess, but there will also be things that will be very hard to be confronted with within governmental systems and many of these military industrial complexes who have known all the way and try to hold this all back and keep it for themselves. It's going to shake the whole governmental and political situation. It's going to shake the religious world. It's going to be the absolutely biggest event in recorded history. I'm absolutely definite about that when it breaks. And I don't think it's going to be long before it does.
Well, we're about out of time, but I did want to mention, too, just how important I think it is and how great what you've done here. I think it moves us towards this disclosure by, like you said, you put in a lot of time and effort on this thing, and then you were able to put it online for people to view for free, which probably, helped you actually with sales, I think. But still, even more so and more importantly, it helped with people being able to have access to your great film and the necessary information that you put in there. So I think that's just very important and a great service that you provided there.
Well, thank you.
Thanks.
I think I mean, today, with the situation on the internet, people actually expect information to be free. I mean, every newspaper has understood that they can't claim money from people who want to read their news sites. They have to put it out for free, or else they will lose their viewers or their public. You know, so. Information today in the 21st century is the thing that is for free for everyone. And at least when, I mean, of course, it costs a lot of money to make films, so you have to try to mm-hmm. get some return in some way or another. And what we have done is we have also made the film available on DVD, of course, and we have put out all the interviews in full length for people to download for a small fee. And which has, you know, given us a small amount of return on the work that we have done, but I mean, it doesn't come close to what the production actually cost. And we didn't do this for the money. We did it because we had this great interest in the topic, and we felt that it was time to try to do what we could to participate in this ground movement to get this information up to the surface, and I hope that our film has been a contribution in that respect.
All right, great. Just to remind people, the website's newparadigm.no. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
It was my pleasure. I'm really excited to be able to get a chance to talk to you guys, so thanks for taking the time out of your day.
Thanks, the same to you.
All right. Thank you to Truel and Terry Top Tens. Go check out their movie because it's wonderful and it's free and it's online. And join us next week. We're going to have Greg Bishop. He's written a book called Project Beta, and it's about Richard Doty and Paul Benowitz. And I've talked about Doty in the Air Force before and some of this disinformation kind of that came out and drove this poor Benowitz guy crazy. So we're going to get into detail on this very important chapter in UFO history. And actually, this is a period of time that generated a lot of the UFO mythology out there. So it's going to be a great show. Thank you for listening to Open Minds Radio. Join us next week. And don't forget to visit openminds.tv for all your latest UFO news.